So normally, say, okay, let me write. What is what we're trying to figure out, right? So normally this lecture is delivered as, you know, it's kind of a classification exercise. And if you're a mathematician, a photonist, or particle physicist in 1970s, you'll be very excited. Otherwise, in the hope that you don't fall asleep, and I'm teaching you the spinner field, so I'll take a spin of it. So today, we're gonna try to solve a case, okay? And let me see, oh, I need a bow spin. Very hard for me to sit somewhere, but okay. Okay, there's some background knowledge. Today we're gonna live in a parallel universe. Who knows, this is like a computer generated password. And that's how they label the parallel universe. And this is year 2022. And so, you must be Lei Dei Wu. What brings you here? My atoms are behaving weird in the mirror. Please, detective, tell me what's going on with my atoms. We'll look into it. Wiggins, time to work. Find a suitable theory for the lady. I have other mysteries to solve. Wiggins, where are you? Oh, I have a group of scions. Perfect. The mystery is about Phi, so this must be fate that you are going to help me solve the mysteries. So far, the clue we have is everything we learned about Psi so far. So this is a universe that the experiment is leading theory, you know, which is way more exciting. Say as we do this experiment with the atom, nobody knows why. And so far, you know, Dirac write down his famous equation, I guess, and then we quantize it, and we kind of just stare at the free theory and just think, what should we do with it? Okay. The new clue is Wu's observation. Also, this is a better universe because Wu eventually actually got the Nobel Prize. Means you know, we have a group of committee know physics and they are good people.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have only one clue. So there's not much to do right away. This is more like our crime scene. I don't know what a crime has been done, but that's the most analogy thing, is that Wu says something happened when I play with my atoms. That's all the clue we got, and a bunch of things we know about Psi so far. So I'll describe. So what should we do now? In a case-solving case.
Uses things to test parity, I don't know.
Yeah, but that's right, eventually we'll get there. But see, think it more like a game. You have some clues, and in a normal, yes, in a normal investigation.
You have to interrogate the suspect.
We have to interrogate the suspect, very good. That's suspects. That's right. And I'll write down the suspects when they come to play. That's very good. But what will be the first thing? If you're thinking about playing a murder mystery, somebody dead, where do you go?
Examine the crime scene.
You examine the crime scene. So here is the crime scene. What exactly happened to Wu's atoms? So it's 1956, and the atoms are called cobalt, and normally seen as Co60. So Wu says Everybody tells me this word is really symmetric. So I expect when this thing decay, I'll just see like a pattern of a sun and they come in everywhere. All directions are equal. Why not? Well, in reality, apparently some direction is more equal. But what she does is to dump these atoms in the liquid helium, which is normally what people do if they want a really cold item. And then they do this thing. Okay, this is gonna be tough. You know, this drawing is gonna be very not working, but I hope this sort of okay. I'll label the current. So what Wu does is put her many, many coal atom. Okay, maybe this is time to invest. This color doesn't help. Okay, everything looks white. But that's where the cobalt atoms are. There are a bunch. And she says, cool, and throw into in the middle of what we commonly know as a solenoid. So that's very cool. And then Wu says, I have nothing to do but play with my cold atom. So she's gonna throw it in. Okay. I'll draw sometime later into the mirror image of this experiment. It's like the current, except you see it's going to go the other way. Yeah? I'll work on this drawing when I give you something to do. Okay. So then what Wu finds out is that electrons coming out. Electrons, very easy to find. Probably the easiest thing for us to find. And here, well, Wu says it's a symmetry, so I must find some electrons coming out. And turns out, no, exactly no. Electrons here. So that's the crime scene, that the electrons are not behaving as we expected. In a mirror, you expect something happen, but no. It's all going in the background. There's a YouTube video, and the picture is so pretty. And he is saying a lot of very wonderful things without using formula. So I do recommend you to watch. But if you want me to summarize, this is what happened. And at this point, you just have to imagine the current going the other way. Yeah.
What do you have to do to the apparatus to get the mirror image? You just like the solenoid the other way?
Yes, exactly. You wear the solenoid the other way.
Okay.
But my drawing skill is really hurting me at this point. I'll try to draw that one later. So this is the crime scene, is things are behaving different in the mirror.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And the mirror image, are the electrons being injected in the downwards direction or no electrons at all?
Up? Is there electron here? It's a small amount enough that statistically they are all going.
They're all going down.
Yeah.
And in the first case,
yeah, exactly. You can, we're a theorist. So ditch the systematic error. It's basically a completely opposite than from our expectation. So, something wrong with this mirror symmetry thing. Okay, so the point is, okay, I hope it's not hard to convince you that cobalt 60 is very complicated to study. 60, I like one. preferably one, but if I can't avoid it, I'll study two things. Okay. 60 you should learn from our quantum matter lecture, not me. Okay. So point is, there are suspects. Suspects are coming. So the first suspect has a name that we know. Well, let's just say the first suspect is Dirac, and the second suspect is Weyl. So time to interrogate our suspect. Who would you prefer to interrogate?
Dirac.
Okay, I heard Dirac first. Dirac says, oh, I don't know what's going on with me in the mirror. Like, I'm innocent. Okay. So now we'll interrogate with a while spinner. All right. So at this point, I want you to form groups. And it's very strict. It's either a group of two or three. It cannot be singleton, cannot be more than three. Okay? Except Sukanya. But Sukanya has an advantage. Sukanya, can you fix your Zoom on yourself? Just pin yourself on Zoom and not looking at me for a minute, because that's very useful. Yes, can we form groups quick? I'll give you 1 minute to form a group. We're going to interrogate the suspect. Okay. Yes, group? Two or three? Done? Okay, move. If you need to move. Okay, move. Okay. Done? Okay, step two. Find a mirror. Okay, you can either use you can put it in the Zoom with yourself. Just start a meeting. And you can also use your selfie camera on your phone. Okay? But make sure it actually looks like a mirror. So can you please check like your mirror looks like a mirror? For example, I have this bowl, so it's easy to check if it's a mirror. Okay, find a mirror. Quick, get your mirror set up. It needs to be, you need to be see yourself in it. The mirror, and test it's a mirror. So because some of the device, like this, yeah, exactly. No, we're studying mirror symmetry, so if it's not a mirror, then it's not gonna work. Yeah? I hope you all find a mirror. But Dan comes in and says, if you just can't find a mirror, you can use me. Not a preferred, this is a very bad mirror. Okay, so this is my Halloween costume as a mirror. Okay, mirror ready? Okay, prepare your well spinner. Let's all use right-handed, easier for right-handed spinner. Show me a your fist. Your right-handed fist, which is your right-handed well spinner as a fist. Let me see. This is the momentum going. Okay, this way is probably easier to see. Like it goes towards the thumb. And if you use your right-hand rule, which is commanding with a right hand, you will determine the spin. Okay? Done? Okay. Put your right-handed spinner in front of the mirror and test. You can find three independent directions. Yeah? We're in three space dimensions. There have got to be three directions. Yeah? Okay. Okay. Very good. Next step. There are lots of steps. So how can you somehow separate the three directions? There are some directions that are different from the other directions. Okay, see, I guess it's useful for me. Yeah? This is different from this. But this is sort of similar to this. Okay, so now you need to it's a group study, so you might decide among yourself if you want to take the perpendicular direction or the parallel direction. I'm referring to the momentum. So your thumb is going into the mirror or parallel to the mirror. All right. Very good. And I'll write the rest of the things on board.
You gotta put.
Choose coordinate system and record your momentum and the spin direction. Okay. And then you look at the mirror. You do the same, record the momentum and the spin direction. And okay, so choose your coordinate system, you record your momentum and the spin direction. It would be nice if you choose a coordinate system that your momentum and the spin is on the axis. And then look at the mirror image, record the momentum spin direction, and answer some questions. Is the momentum same? Is the spin same? Is the velocity same? Okay, you have 10 minutes.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm a bit confused. What do you want us to do? I'm a bit confused. What do you want
to do? Choose the coordinate system. And then you say the momentum is x direction minus x direction, y direction minus y direction. If you choose a coordinate system, you should be able to do that, right?
Okay.
So which direction you choose?
This way and this way. We have
momentum. Momentum. Don't move your head.
Momentum goes this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? No. Sorry. Separate. Each person do the investigation now individually. Sorry. At this point, well, the group is for later. Okay, do every single person investigate this set of questions individually. Not combining your hands. Your hands should have been. Yeah, this, I have no idea what's that. Okay, sorry.
What is the point that momentum is going into the it's the same as this. Just don't. Yeah, because that's horrible. So, if you have a right-handed mirror,
yeah,
this is a mirror.
But it doesn't happen that way because.
Has become left handed.
Uh-huh.
But it's also true for the other direction.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing special about pointing in the mirror.
That's right.
Pointing in the mirror seems like the direction is also flipped versus the other direction.
Yeah, exactly.
So when we do helicity, there is a difference.
No, because you either flip a spin or flip a momentum. You only flip the one thing.
No, but here we're also, yeah.
No?
Yeah.
When you do this or this?
Do we not put the spin? No.
Yeah, see, your from your palm to your finger, it's still clockwise.
Oh.
So this is clockwise, that's also clockwise.
Oh. So we either flip momentum or
flip, in the mirror. Yeah. Okay. So for the last 3 minutes, I want you to talk around to the other group. Well, first talk to your teammates if you haven't. but if you have talked to your teammate and you have some consensus, and now you talk to other group and see what's their results. Okay. All right. To Kenya, can you unmute and tell me one of your investigations?
Am I audible? Can you confirm?
Either one you like.
Can you confirm if you am I if I'm audible?
Yes,
we can hear you.
Okay. So if we have a spin, if we have a momentum perpendicular to the mirror, then the direction of the momentum changes, whereas the spin remains the same. So the helicity changes.
Thank you. I want someone else to tell me the others. Thank you. So the reported case is this. I hope you, that's the consensus?
Yes.
And the helices become changed? Okay, can someone tell me the other case?
I think the direction is to change. The left one is downwards, the right one is upwards.
Wait, what are we saying for the mirror? Are we saying the mirror is like in front or behind, or is the dotted line the mirror?
That's the mirror.
This is the mirror. Wait, that one, doesn't the helicity say the same?
Okay, now it's good. But the other one is wrong as well. The left one.
What is this wrong? This is exactly my hand. It's a circle. Sorry, like my drawings are not very good, but can somebody tell me about the parallel case? Somebody?
The momentum is fixed.
Okay.
Fixed, but the spin changes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, and what happens to the helicity?
It goes
to minus. So this is our conclusion. Wait, no, that's our half conclusion. So now we write down our conclusion is that we start with the right-handed spinner. Well, spinner. And now we get a left. That almost makes sense because we're talking about mirrors. Okay, our suspect has been interrogated and spits out this information. So now we can go back to our bigger suspect here. bigger, twice as big, exactly twice as big. Bigger suspect, Dirac spinner. So by knowing the information that, oh, new suspects. I mean, if we're talking about Dirac spinner, how could we not talk about all these beautiful guys, right? New suspects. So, Dirac spinner says that I transform and the parity in some way. And what do you think is going to be go there? Knowing the information from the wild spinner is that they are gonna you are gonna interchange hands. Let me remind you, it used to look like this. And your conclusion is the left-handed spinner is gonna be a right-handed spinner, and right-handed spinner is gonna be left.
Did they flip?
They flip. Okay, so what do you think that suspect. These are your suspects, and which one is good?
Wait, what? Sorry, what do you mean?
Your suspect are the gamma matrices.
This is really just a question, which gamma matrix?
Exactly. Well, we hope, right? I mean, we need a constant matrix there, and the gammas are really our bet.
Finding them in the Dirac basis or the
let's just look at the well chiral well basis that we always use.
Yeah.
It seems fits the bill. Just swap. So well, okay. Whoa. We so far. We only talk about mirrors. Well, that's what Wu did. And then we're gonna take a leap of faith and a jump to the exciting parity symmetry. Why are mirror and parity symmetry the same? They're not equivalent. Okay, so the idea is what mirror does, as we investigated, will flip one direction. And what a parity does is to flip how many directions? Parity.
All of them.
All of them, how many? Three. No, three, not four. The time is dealt some other way. So let's take this leap of a face and replace this by parity, and you're like, why? Yeah, so this is not gonna work if I just say that leap of faith. Okay, now you have to watch me. I'll show you that the parity is close enough to mirror, okay? So my head, I kind of do arrow backs, so we just have to accept my standing direction, what we normally call Z, is the mirror direction. That's the one mirror wants to flip. And the parity wants to flip off. What I want to show you, see, these are the other two, right? I'm going to show you that the other two, you don't need a discrete symmetry. You don't need a parity. What you need is called a rotation by 180 degrees, which means we can understand a parity by understanding mirror plus the rotation by 180 degrees. But you know, we have been studying rotation all this time. We know how to do rotation by 180 degrees. That's why people says if you learn some information from studying what happens in the mirror, then you will understand a parity. So in that very strict sense, if you look at like books like Peskin, they will only show you this case, because that's the case a thing is flipped. and the other two directions can be understood by rotation. So this is for parity, not a mirror. For parity, we like to keep flip momentum. And keep spin. And this is not too hard to understand because parity says x go to minus x. Momentum is sort of like x dot. We will go to minus x dot. But a spin has both spins more like angular momentum. It has x and p. So it shouldn't change. So if you want to understand on the state or creation annihilation operator point of view, then you will often say, oh, you erase this thing. This example is given. Okay, so Dirac Spinner gave us some information. Let's take a break and then we'll come back with even more suspects. Okay. Back in the investigation that we obtained this from the Dirac. Instead of carrying all those PP minus around, I'll just say under parity, it becomes that. And beta is basically gamma zero, and people like Weinberg like to give it a new name because it's important related to parity. Also, I think that's Dirac's original beta. Yeah.
Sorry.
I almost said it wasn't.
Yeah. I have trouble understanding this equation because you said that beta gives you the mirror transformation.
Uh huh.
So we have a mirror transformation of the field, but where is the rotation? Because we want the mirror symmetry and a rotation for the parity.
Okay. Never thought about it, but I'll think about it. But a rotation isn't it just this? And you put it like J3 and omega this is theta 3 and put the theta 3 equals pi, wouldn't this give you the rotation?
So it's a phase effect.
Probably a phase. Okay, I'll think about it.
Sorry.
No, it's good.
Well, what's the negative x? Like, because if the parity transformation of psi,
okay, fine. I'll carry those things around. Happy?
No, I meant like if psi is the parity transformation of psi.
Yeah. Then the right hand side will be psi at minus x because you flip the x. Isn't the parity transformation. This. That will x on a x nu, for example, and that will flip this. And it doesn't change time.
I mean, if that's the case and we're doing that to the psi, is it the fact that for the total state psi, we have to do P and then P minus on the other side, and that's what gives us the gamma naught? Because if you're just doing it like...
So this equation says if I take psi and study how it does under the operator P, and what we have result is that it's almost the same as what exactly the transformation does, except you pick up a constant matrix gamma zero, which flipped you're left-handed and right-handed. It's like for example, if I want to write down a Hamiltonian density and ask, what do you mean by it's a scalar? I meant that except the x has been transformed, there's nothing else going on.
Wait, would you mind, like, so if our psi is like,
yeah,
psi plus psi minus,
right,
and we apply this matrix, and then I guess the inverse of that matrix, can we just like explicitly see, because I'm not explicitly seeing how it flips the gamma naught, how we get a gamma naught, or gamma zero.
So that's gamma zero. Uh-huh. This is plus, this is minus.
Yeah.
So I'm going to multiply them together.
Yeah, and that flips, right. But that is related to the parity matrix with minus, minus, minus.
Oh, this is, I'm just saying, this is the transformation. This is not the operator.
Oh.
This x on the location that you used to be at a t. X, now you're at there. So see this lambda? Well, tells me, I don't have a b here. But this lambda will tell me where the new location is.
Wait. Like that one, it doesn't pick up a gamma naught.
Because this is a scalar.
Oh, okay. So the operator does two things. It flips.
The transformation does one thing, and the corresponding operator does thing. Like that's how you write how things transform, right? Your field gets to be pushed into some different place. And a lot of things we're studying about how field transform and their Lorentz transformation or whatever transformation is what comes in front. Nothing comes in front. Then this guy is a happily scalar. And if you pick a vector for lack of imagination, then you will still change their location, but now you're gonna lack of index. This is how this works. Yeah, right? Your vector has to change the location, and the operator will pick up something to make you a vector.
Okay.
So there is always two things going on. The operator will tell you you need a gamma zero. But the transformation still happened. This transformation happened. If you act on this tx, y, z, it will become t minus x minus y minus z. So that flip has to happen. Mm-hmm. And we're just saying, well, you know, parity, besides doing that, the Dirac field is not exactly the same as the parity Dirac field, you need this gamma zero factor to make it transform properly. And that's this little gamma zero is what from our activity, our investigation tells us it is a gamma zero. And which is most, I would say the most important question to answer is how a Dirac field transforms. That's a very important question. Okay. So can I? It's just my short-handed notation if you want. Is that my arrow means precisely the thing I erased. Otherwise, you will see me writing a bunch of P and a P minus, and they will all cancel because P is P inverse. I mean, it's P. P squared is 1. By definition, P is P inverse. It says if you flip all the x's and flip all of them back, nothing should change. So there's really no reason to carry the P and P inverse around. And also this is a two-hourly light, because we know that the gamma zero square is one. Perfect. We pick others, we will have some minus lines to deal with. Okay. Are we good? Now we get into, so if you remember, we studied some well spinner, and then we studied with doubling things, and we say, ha, now I can study two objects, and this is called the Dirac spinner. And what are we gonna do next? Continue my theme? Yeah, well spinner, now it doubled to become Dirac spinner. So what I should do next?
Can I ask a question from that?
Okay.
If H was a spinner, we would have you need the gamma zero, but if it wasn't a vector, we need the gamma zero.
For parity?
For parity.
Don't ask me about a vector and a parity. I can tell you later. It might. It's definitely not a gamma zero, because gamma zero is in the spinner representation. It might need something. The reason is we don't care as much about a vector and a parity, is that a parity is not a broken in UED. And I suspect mu is doesn't break parity, but I'll figure it out. All right. So, wait. But to come back to my question. We have well spinner and I double it and it become a Dirac spinner. What should I do now?
See if it's valid in the Dirac equation. If it works.
Come back to my theme. That probably would work, and we'll do something like that later. But my question is, from well spinner, I doubled, and I get Dirac spinner. To double, exactly.
Double.
So if I double is the theme today. So if I double Dirac spinner, what do I get? Maybe including some bars. Yeah, but you can have bars. You can, let's say we have a pair of a Dirac spinner, and then you are freely to take some dagger, multiply some gamma zero. We'll do that. Huh?
You get two.
Okay. My ingredients is two Dirac spinner. And I said you can do whatever with them. You can put a bar on it, you can dagger it, you can multiply by gamma zero.
I think it is better or a scalar.
Yeah, but see this, okay, another different question. This thing is not a Lorentz invariant, not a Lorentz covariant. Can you do something very simple to turn it a Lorentz invariant or covariant?
Put a bar
on it. See, two Dirac spinner. This is called our mass term. And, I'm already on the top of. Okay, this might take a big board. I'll come over here. What else did we encounter? Yeah, we can sandwich the gamma mu, and this is called the mass, and this is called the kinetic term. But what stops us to sandwich even more gammas in there? So now we have a list of suspects. See? And what stops us just keep doing this, right? And what stops me from keep doing this? Yeah? Okay. Okay, somebody should really stop me right now. Otherwise, I'll be doing otherwise I'll be doing this until 12:15. Yeah? Where should I stop?
Now.
Okay, good. Should where? Well, okay. The point is, we are studying inequivalent interactions, potentially interactions. So when should I stop? Think about it. Okay, this is a very good question. Think about it and talk to your neighbor about it, and in 2 minutes, tell me where should I have stopped at least. Okay, give you a hint.
Some other.
Because
four of them.
Yes. And then after that, you can build all of them.
So you remember we have this discussion that you know, if you have too many, then comes back to that conversation.
Then why is the master called master called
kinetic? Oh, it's just because our mass term looks like this, and our kinetic term looks like this.
Is there a reason why?
At this point, they were known to us as mass and the kinetic term. Later, they would be known as some other things too.
Really?
Yeah. They would do other things, wonderful things to us. Yeah.
Why is the second term?
Here,
oh.
I'm sorry. You put the derivative in there.
Yeah.
What about that's a scalar as well.
Yeah, that's good. We always want the scalars in our Lagrangian.
But the other ones are not scalars.
You can. We'll worry about that later. We'll marry them to some other things so that they will become scalars. Huh?
So in there you have some two derivatives or whatever, because you have gamma mu, for example.
Well, it doesn't have to be derivatives. There's other things that have like a single.
Like theta mu.
Something you learned from your classical physics. Not we haven't learned it. And I'll delay the learning of that to France.
Oh.
but okay. All right, where should I have stopped? Yes? Where should I have stopped? Huh? Not go keep going? Keep going? Keep going.
One more.
Stop. One more. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. You know, writing those bottom ones continue for the next 30 minutes is not my plan. Okay. Okay. Let's look at our suspects. And okay, let's do something about it. Can you somehow write this term in a simple way? Yeah?
Gamma 5,
because no matter what I pick, all this index, it's gonna be 0, 1, 2, 3. Otherwise, they just square. Okay, they all have to be different. If they are the same, you have this very nice identities to use. I'm not gonna give you anything interesting. You get some ones on minus ones. Okay, what about what about this line? Then you can make the idea of a gamma 5, but a gamma 5 is 4. Well, there's no problem. You get a 1, you will know that that 1 will find somebody and become a 1. Yeah? What about the line above?
Do the same thing too.
Well, then you will get 2 of them, right? Because gamma 5 is 4. Okay, what do I do? What do we know? What do we, you know, the most about the gammas? Yeah? Very good. What does the anti-commute to?
Eta mu nu.
Yeah, that's our Dirac algebra, which tells that Only the commutator would be interesting, because what's the point to put like eta mu nu in? And of course, this term is always often written as
with the Lorentz generator, because that is the commutator of them.
So we found all the suspects and their alias. And now is the time to interrogate them. Okay, let's interrogate them. Remember, we have this thing.
Where are the list of suspects again?
Because we want to find the interaction term that looks weird in the mirror for our U.
Mm-hmm. And they look weird because of the.
I don't know at this point why they. No, basically, see, that's the point of me of trying to write as many as possible and I hope you stop me, is we realize this is a finite problem. That's all we can write down. So if we interrogate all of them, we win.
Yeah.
And if it's infinite, then we're in trouble. Yeah?
This might be going all the way back. So we're always working with the Dirac Hamiltonian, right? Not the while, because everything here.
Right. Wait. I mean, today we might, if you want. We can go to the while and I'll say something about it. Yeah. That's right. All I wrote down is about Dirac. And there's some reasons. But if you have particle physicists, you should really only work. Except to, yeah, exactly. Otherwise, you are assuming like you're dealing with the post spontaneous symmetry breaking stuff. Before, there's no way you can write it. Anyway. We have some suspects, and we have actually five of them. So I'll start with the ones that doesn't have a mu or nu index. Okay, so I'll start with the mass, and then with this guy, and then move on to the vector and move on to this guy, and we'll leave the thing in the middle to whoever is interested to do it, because it has two gamma instead of zero or one. I like a simple thing. All right, so then the first thing to realize is how would a psi, you know, okay. So first thing we're investigating is this guy. So how would psi bar psi transform? We know psi, good. And the psi bar is, that's one of the very few definitions you have to know. What's a psi bar?
It's
a dagger gamma nu. Okay. Let's just replace that. Okay. So then, seems that it's good to know what does psi dagger do. Psi dagger goes to psi dagger, this thing, and gamma zero, because the dagger thing. Yeah? So then, we'll see that this goes to psi dagger gamma zero, and this goes to gamma zero, and this psi goes to gamma zero psi. And the very good pair annihilation. And we get our psi bar back. The argument is sound. So the mass term does not break parity. I mean, they will probably already noticed if the mass term breaks parity. Okay. So yes, why don't you do the next one? the one that is like a mass term but has a gamma 5 in the middle.
Sorry, this size that you've written here are all t minus x, right? The argument is t minus x.
Once there is an arrow, so this pre-arrow is tx. Once there is an arrow, that means x gets to be flipped. I just don't want to carry the argument.
And do you have the third dm on 0 because the psi goes to...
So this is how it works.
That and that. Yeah, yeah. Okay, perfect.
And then there is that lonely one that they were there. In the... Okay. Can you do the one that has a gamma 5 there?
One of the gamma zeros goes with the gamma zero thing, and then the other gamma zero becomes 5 bar again, 5 bar down, 5 zero. This is very just hand waved.
Okay. Yeah, order matters. So keep track of it. Okay. Okay. You have all the ingredients to do this. You know how Poisson Dagger does. You know how Poisson does. Okay. Meanwhile, I'll write this. I'm going to write it. Very nice. Yes? What do we discover? No, minus signs. I said we will be plagued by minus signs. Okay. See, this is where gamma 5 is. So gamma 5 has to be here. And these two things annihilate, and we need to flip them. So you get a minus sign. So we already found it. Yay.
Thank God.
Responsible. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait.
Another gamma zero.
Is there another gamma zero?
We want one. See, this needs to be flipped so that this Poisson dagger can talk all the way to this to give us a bar.
Okay.
So, interesting. So this one is indeed, we caught one. Actually, this is the triumph of our investigation. We caught one, and this one is traditionally is known as the Yukawa interaction between nuclear in nucleus. And normally it will come with something called a pseudo scalar, so that it will cancel that.
Here you added another extra gamma zero, which is
add any gamma zero.
I think you did.
No,
because
that's from the bar.
Oh,
no, no extra gamma zero. All the gamma zero are very responsible where they are.
Yeah.
No extra. So that's the interaction that Yukawa wants to solve the problem. Why the nucleus decay or other nucleus problem, that's the interaction he wrote down. So what do you think? What's the key of violating the parity if we just don't do more calculus? What's the difference? It's a gamma 5. So
if you do the computation, which you are welcome to do, you will realize the other one responsible is this, called another one. And that one is actually how the weak theory works. So we will spend, well, if you're with me in the standard model class, we will spend a lot of things to do, a lot of time to study this. And so, yes, we need a effective theory, which is Yukawa's theory, to explain what Wu saw in her experiment. And we also need a weak theory to fundamentally explain what happened. Okay. So here is a tally.
Doesn't for that one, yeah. Doesn't it depend on what gamma mu is? So if gamma mu is like gamma I, gamma
one, yeah, I know. So it turns out it doesn't.
So
just do the computation. Turns out to, I can't explain because you actually have to do it.
Okay.
No, it does. What the idea is, this is not supposed to not change. Okay, so it's actually a very good question. Now that I think, very good question is what I didn't explain is this thing transformed as a vector. It means the zero component not change. It's like this. You say exactly what a vector does. A vector and their parity does this. So yes, you're very right. They behave differently. But of course, for this weak theory things, you will see them all flipped, which is why that thing is all called a vector, and this is somehow called a axial vector.
What?
So yes, of course,
axial vector.
Yeah, something like
that thing, because it flips the other.
Okay, like, so if you are interested about the meson and theory, that the effective theory, the best person to talk to is Jun Wu. As soon as you mention meson, you'll see his eyes. Like, yeah, you are talking about important stuff. So then, this you have to wait for Latham and I. And in case you are interested in this guy, you need to talk to Mina. There's some electric dipole thing that she says that the experiment's trying to measure, but it's consistent with zero. So that term, if you match it with the, okay, I'm writing things you learn from classical. See? Index all contracted and it'll be nice. And that thing is consistent with zero. Like in, not, that term is not measured. So I have two more little things to tell you. One thing is called a tallying. So if we count, there is one term for mass. Okay, I do the easy thing. Tell me how many different ones of this you can write down. There is a gamma mu in the middle.
Four.
And then we say jump to the axial vector and the pseudo scalar. And now this should be easy, but how many terms are there in here? Six, because we're so like a thorough with the Lorentz generator. And how much is this? 16. And actually, because of this way of counting, we're basically doing the expansion of this. So this 16 is called a 2 to the 4. Shouldn't we be happy with this? How many degrees of freedom does the Dirac field have? And now we have two of them. And you were like, this is like a crazy. This mathematical identity doesn't really work in a lot of different places, right? We were like, where did you get this? Like, this is crazy. So the idea is, of course, you know, you change them to five and it blows up. The idea is not to change them into five. What do you do? Is you do even dimension, then the left-hand side is summed. It's always going to be 2 to the d. It's always going to be like this, ooh, 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 and then you add them up, it's 2 to the d. And the only way to make the other place to work out is what has to be inside. Two to the e by two. And that's in a very funny way, you discovered how many degrees of freedom a Dirac spinner would have in the general even dimension. And there are other, well, in the appendix, I show you the other way. But this is cool, right? Because the counting we did must work. So this, let me just elaborate this. This is the least independent interaction. And then this had better to be equals to the dimension beam, not, yeah, dimension of psi times dimension of psi. And the dimension is really degree of freedom. Because you have two of them. I found this pretty cool. So the next last thing, because we start at least 10 minutes late, so I'll tell you the last thing I want to tell you is, the case is solved. We caught everybody responsible. The last thing I want to show you is a particular interesting Lagrangian interaction for us, which would be with remember our little game that it's gonna be an electron, which there is electron. So how do we make them interact with photon? What's photon? Mu? Yeah, you have that in classical mechanics. And turns out this is a very bad idea unless we're very careful. And the idea, the problem is that photon is the problem actually. So if I ask you about a photon besides Maxwell equation, what else you can give me? One of the most important thing when you write it down.
Gauge.
Interesting, we are talking about gauge too. I didn't even make it. Okay, why? So for years, I have, it's a hard concept to explain global symmetry and gauge symmetry, especially that the gauge symmetry is really not a symmetry. It just tells us that we can't describe that thing Lorentz covariantly unless we impose this condition. So when you learn Neusser theorem, it probably says if you have a continuous global symmetry, you will find a conserved current in the part. Right? You should just remove the global away. Is that because gauge symmetry is not symmetry? You only need a continuous symmetry. So it's hard to explain. So yesterday I have this thought. I hope it will work because I've never done this before. I only thought about yesterday. And so far only Dan in my office, Matt and Natasha has been tested with my explanation. But it sure will be entertaining because we're already near the end of the class. Okay, so the idea, so we have an apple. Yeah, this is an apple. And apple has this really nice rotational symmetry. It's very nice. And what we call the global symmetry, it turns around back to itself, da-li-da-la. And then I can also say apple has these intrinsic property, I'll call it a label. Once it tells me what is the apple. For example, it has a stem and a smooth thick skin. And for me, importantly, it's crispy. Right?
these are what defines an apple. And that thing is like, you know, appealing to our eyes, like, oh, artistic. The point is you can break the global symmetry, which we do all the time. It just means that the symmetry wasn't there. Broken. Sorry, Bistro. So the global symmetry has broken, but everybody agree with me. This is still an apple, right? Doesn't change. What's it's intrinsically broken? No problem. Just means that a nice eye appealing thing is not there anymore. Still apple. So if you decided to somehow change some of this label, that there's like crossing these out, well, you will either get an orange, or maybe you get a pineapple. See, these are not apples, no longer apple, because you remove the smooth skin, and you remove the crispiness, and then you're talking about some other fruit. So that's what I meant about this so-called gauge symmetry. Gauge symmetry is not a symmetry. It's an intrinsic property of what you described. I mean, even pineapple and apple share some parts in their name. That doesn't make them the same fruit. Okay, so now let's look at our photon. Photon, so first, I know there is an approach to break Lorentz covariance, like it's not apparent, but it's ugly. And yeah, it's useful in like a quantum optics, but we'll stay with Lorentz covariant description of the photon, which means we have a mu. And this mass come with this gauge symmetry. And you can't remove it. If you remove it, you start with a massless gauge boson, and if you remove that, you become a massive gauge boson. I know they share something in their name, but as I said, sharing something in the name means nothing. These are very completely different things. Look, there is a W boson, very heavy, massive. And there's a photon. They have very different things. So that's my demo about gauge symmetry and the global symmetry. Global symmetry just means you used to have some nice property which is nice. But sometimes nature is not as nice, then you just accept it. There's nothing wrong about it. But gauge symmetry is very, very wrong. If you remove the photon's gauge symmetry, then you end up with a W boson or whatever, which actually that will happen in our, well, not a photon, but in the standard model class, you will see this exactly this happen. And then the physicists, of course, wouldn't put in some in hand to break the gauge symmetry. That's not possible. If you do that, it's no longer the thing you are studying. But what people do is called a spontaneous symmetry break. They put a Higgs like the maximum hat potential. Then you will see this happens. You start with massless W bosons at a very high energy, and they are called the W mu and B mu, and then you go through this breaking things, you end up with massive W boson, massive Z boson, and the gamma. And the original thing is not there anymore. So you probably want to break it for your own purpose. You'd better be aware of it. You need to be, no, oh, I'm doing this, so we're not gonna have the massive, massless gauge boson anymore. Yeah, exactly, you're not gonna have them. So that's what I want to say about these two things. And now, I invite you to look at this interaction I have.
I mean, this is terrible. Okay, this makes more sense. But still, I'll be left with this thing. Because of the gauge symmetry. And this can't be it. Because remember, if you have this term that breaks the gauge symmetry, then we're no longer talking about a photon. You're talking about something else, just not a photon. It's not a complete disaster. It's just not a photon we're studying. So,
how would you know that this is not a photon anymore?
Because this term is produced in your Lagrangian. Gauge symmetry says your Lagrangian has better to be remain the same. That's why that people call it a symmetry, because the Lagrangian is invariant. Okay, so the idea to cancel this thing, people has to think, what could we do? We used to say that we have this symmetry, which gives some charge, and it's a global symmetry. And this is where this term comes in and it says, why don't we gauge the symmetry? So turn a global symmetry into a gauge symmetry. That doesn't mean this gauge symmetry produces a current. No, it's because the global, you're setting alpha into a number, into alpha, all alpha x equals one. That's the thing gave us, the current gave us the charge. That's the global symmetry works with Noether theorem. Let's just say that I hope that if this happens, then we'll have a useful term. Where is this? Oh, that's very sad. I erased. Remember, this term comes with a derivative, our kinetic term, and it's x on psi. So if psi's global symmetry is turned into a gauge symmetry, it'll give us some term like that. And the thing to emphasize is, of course, it doesn't always happen, right? This term will give you something like that, but probably with some coefficient. And you'd better have this two precisely cancel.
But the coefficient of e to the minus iota q can be anything. Why are we allowed to choose that to be exactly the same thing as our gauge symmetry? Because in the gauge symmetry, we can choose any function, but...
Right. That's if the function you choose for the a mu is alpha x. I think the only thing that will save us is to put alpha x somewhere else. Well, I mean, the coefficient, of course, can be anything. But alpha x itself better be... Same, if I choose a beta x, it's not really going to help me.
Yeah, no, it's not going to help, but...
Like, our goal is to make this thing. That's not the course I was doing. And we say that, look, I have a global current. Meets with a mu sounds like a very good interaction. The goal is that I can add this to my free Lagrangian and claim its interaction. And the logic is, if you only do that, you suffer from this term. And the remedy is that basically the idea, the logic here is, if you don't change the psi at all, there is no way you can add this Lagrangian in because you have this extra term. So psi has to change.
I know, but we're using another symmetry of the... using another symmetry to nullify the effect of gauge symmetry.
I know, it's like the way we say it is that now both psi and a has to transform that gauge symmetry. Okay. It's the same gauge symmetry because they are identified by alpha.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, it would be interesting to figure out what needed.
I mean, are we postulating the same
if you were to transform a mu with
yeah.
the
yeah.
You have to do the same
thing. Exactly. That's the reasoning.
In order to keep the photon being photon.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm using. Very nice. That's exactly what my pineapple is for. Okay. Is that we need to do this to keep photon be a photon. And well, it's an interesting exercise. It's not hard. The result is that you can, well, the result is, of course, we keep this guy, which is known as the free Lagrangian intact. But you add your interaction, except you have to come with this Q thing to cancel what happens in the connected term. Because when you do derivative, some Q comes. And then people really love Dirac's Lagrangian. They make some definition so such that they can write it without writing the interaction. Nothing is damaged. So the point is we need this and simultaneously, I mean, you know it's going to be minus I f times something. Then that something has to come down here so that the two terms that look like this precisely cancel. And then this is just a convenient way, says if I redefine my partial derivative to this covariant derivative, and then we can absorb that, and I write my QED Lagrangian just like the Dirac Lagrangian, except that the partial derivative become a covariant derivative. And this is called the minimum coupling, so like the simplest way to fix the problem. And there are people writing non-minimum coupling means they come up with some more bizarre things to do, but the point is the photon still has to be removed. And you will see this a lot in standard model, a lot. That's how the standard model is written, is keep changing what's in this covariant derivative. And Leysen has a really nice way to explain this thing called a gauge theory using GR. I'm working with him to make sure that one is in person. He's away for it. Okay. So this is a example of an interaction called a QED. And I'll say one more thing tomorrow after the tutorial. So here, I'm just giving you a funny thing to think. So suppose we studied a parity in class today. So what to study would be make it very savory in our tutorial. I know that's the best choice. What's the second best choice? Not studied. Yeah. Well, the thing is that that will be your motivation to do the tutorial, but we wouldn't see the charge aspect of what we studied until tomorrow morning in the lecture. That'll be probably what we do the first. But you will say, yeah, it is charged. All right, I'm done.